All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. It's Anti-War Radio. I'm Scott Horton, and first up on the show today is our friend Doug Bandow from over at the Cato Institute. Welcome back, Doug. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay.
That's good. Good to have you back on the show. And I noticed that you wrote this article for the American conservative magazine, Mitt Romney, The Foreign Policy of Know-Nothingism. And I thought, hey, isn't that just exactly on point? You even made the same parallel that I've been thinking of to George Bush, where, you know, I don't know, George Bush may have been a bit dimmer all around. Romney at least seems capable, but he's just not interested in foreign policy, is he? He doesn't really know or care about this subject at all.
I think that's exactly right. It's not an issue that motivates him, you know, and I think right now he figures he'll use it to prove, you know, to hardliners that he is one of them. So vote for Mitt Romney. You know that he can be for war like anybody else. And he hopes they won't worry about what he does on domestic issues.
Do you think that he'll be as bad of a pushover as George W. Bush was when it comes to, you know, doing what Richard Pearl wants and that kind of thing?
Well, you know, it's hard to know. I mean, if you look at him, the good news is he doesn't believe anything, which means
right.
I don't think he's actually committed to any of these policies. Now, the bad news is he might figure it doesn't matter very much, so, you know, why not let, you know, let the folks have what they want? Now, he's bright enough where I would think that, you know, he could look at stuff and say, boy, this doesn't make much sense. I mean, heck, George W. Bush, you know, near the end clearly didn't go where Cheney wanted. I mean, Cheney wanted to go to war with Iran and with Syria, and, you know, Bush did not do so. So I could certainly imagine that, you know, Romney could react the same way.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's sort of the hope. It, you know, if it had been, in a way, look back just 4 years, if it had been anybody but McCain, he's such a madman and a wild card that I don't know that you can make the parallel, really. But if you, maybe if it had been Mitt Romney, sort of just cookie-cutter Republican, back 4 years ago, he would have had at least the ability to do a little bit more of that Nixon goes to China thing and maybe make an Iran deal where Obama... Not that Obama would rather not shoot people or whatever, but all the pressure is on him to prove what a tough guy he is. Whereas a Republican sort of has it at, you know, on face value that he's a tough guy, and so if he does something along the lines of peacemaking, it doesn't usually count against him that badly. You know what I mean?
No, that's right. I think that it's one of those, you know, realities of the political process is that for years Republicans have used the charge of weakness against Democrats, so Democrats feel kind of a need to prove themselves. You know, maybe with when Obama's done, whether he, you know, he wins or loses this time, but when he's gone, maybe finally Democrats won't feel that need because he's been as hawkish as George W. Bush. So, you know, when Republicans attack him for weakness, I just have to laugh. I mean, I keep trying to figure out, you know, where is he weak? You know, please show it to me. I mean, he's out there, constantly increasing troops in Afghanistan, you know, killed, Osama bin Laden, you know, got us at war in Libya, you know, more drone strikes all over. You know, so it's very hard for the Republicans to up that, and I think that, unfortunately, that's what Romney's trying to do is to, you know, keep the pressure on saying, look, I'm even tougher.
Yeah, which means, I mean, really, what's left other than nuke Tehran, right?
That's right. That's about it. And unfortunately, you know, that's the sort of thing which Romney has come pretty close to, I think.
Man, yeah. And see, the thing is, too, and this is something that, well, we've definitely learned this lesson in the Obama years, but especially in the Bush years, the whole thing was just such a comic book of all of these lessons, really, the argument ad absurdum. Who you vote for, it really matters who they bring with them. And people, in fact, I'm sure you remember, would say, well, we're tired of Bill Clinton and his antics, we gotta get the adults in there, and okay, I can see that George W. Bush is kind of a lightweight, you know, legacy spot. But at least he's surrounded by really good, smart, capable people like Dick Cheney and stuff like that. But instead, Dick Cheney brought in the least responsible people in the world, the neocons, and let them set the policy, even down to disbanding the Iraqi army and everything else.
Yeah, what was very strange about that, of course, is that until then, you know, Cheney had looked fairly responsible. I mean, you know, he'd been part of the Bush 1 administration. They hadn't gone on to, Baghdad in the first Gulf War. You know, he'd explained exactly why they hadn't. You know, I mean, it's odd, you know, kind of going into that. I mean, both Bush talked about humility in foreign policy. Cheney didn't look so crazy. And then, you know, they took over, and I think Cheney clearly had changed. They had a whole bunch of neocons in position, and after 9/11, they had their opportunity. And boy, did they take it.
Yep. Well, and, you know, I think people, you know, they hear about the Robert Kagan argument that, well, America's great and we need to do all these things or whatever, but where the rubber meets the road, where Kagans actually make policy, you get an Iraq surge and a war prolonged for years. Trillions more wasted, tens, hundreds of thousands more killed. And for what? They put Sadr in power in Baghdad anyway.
No, I mean, that's the great irony, of course, is they kill a couple hundred thousand people, die in the aftermath of the war, so it sure doesn't look very humanitarian. It empowers Iran, which is the country they're most concerned about, you know, that, and we're moving towards an authoritarian regime there, so much for democracy. I mean, the whole thing looks pretty disastrous, but they just move on. I mean, that's what I found striking. All these people who campaigned, if any of them, you know, apologized for a couple hundred thousand or more dead people in Iraq, not that I'm aware of. I mean, they just kind of move on and act as if they had nothing to do with it.
Yeah. Justin Raimondo at Antiwar.com wrote about how Robert Kagan has been cited by Mitt, I guess he's working directly for Mitt Romney, but then his new book has been cited by Barack Obama as, this is the basis of my foreign policy, America uber alles forever.
That's right. I mean, the differences between them are so very small. And I think what's really sad is how so many on the left just don't care. I mean, you know, you would think that they would worry that they supported some guy supposedly because he was for peace and civil liberties. He comes into office, and then lo and behold, he doesn't care very much about peace and civil liberties. You know, you'd love to have them join in and criticize, but people like Glenn Greenwald have been pretty lonely voices in pointing that out. So many of them say, well, he's, you know, our guy, so we're not going to criticize him.
Right. Yeah, poor Glenn. It's the underlying premise of, or the unsaid statement at the beginning of his every essay is, please listen to me, or whatever. Like,
that's
just
because
right. He's constantly, he's always, his audience that he's addressing is the liberals and progressives who still love Obama no matter what he does. That's basically who he's writing to.
That's
you know?
Right. I mean, you know, he had one of his columns, he quoted some guy saying, well, yeah, you know, I just don't really care very much about foreign policy, and if we're killing people, that's too bad. And you're thinking, geez, I mean, what could be more important than wandering around the world, getting involved in unnecessary wars, killing people?
Yeah. Well, the thing is, you can get a real headache if you pretend you're anti-war, but you also love Barack Obama. You're going to have to give up one or the other.
That's
so
exactly right.
At some point, you just say, you know what? I don't care. In fact, one of the great attacks on Glenn was that, well, he's just a privileged white guy. And so that's why he's always going around, you know, complaining about the violation of the rights of people like Al Masri or whatever.
Yep,
because
that's
his privileged,
right.
Spoiled, rotten white guy privilege to do so. All right. Well, anyway, so I wanted to ask you more if you could just cite and explain to people a little bit about who exactly these guys are. I've been picking on Robert Kagan, but Elliot Cohen, isn't he the guy that came up with the whole plan for privatizing the entire Iraqi economy, shock therapy style, overnight, and gave them all zip codes and all of that, and the plan to privatize all the oil right off the bat and drive the price way down?
Well, I mean, he's involved in, look, I mean, there's a whole host of these people who are involved in that stuff. You know, I mean, Bush sent over, you know, 22-year-olds to write traffic laws in Baghdad. So, I mean, you know, they came over assuming that Washington could kind of do everything. And the people that basically Romney has around him, it's kind of a range of people from hardline right to neocon, but they all pretty much were in favor of the Iraq war. They all like, you know, warmongering, and they all like social engineering. You know, and it's amazing to think that all these guys, despite the failure of their policy, are now positioned to take power again if Romney wins.
Yeah, well, that's hardly an issue at all, really, at least on TV. All right, hold it right there. We'll be right back, everybody, with Doug Bandow from Cato and the American Conservative after this. All right, y'all, it's Anti-War Radio. We're talking with Doug Bandow from Cato and the American Conservative magazine, theamericanconservative.com. That's where his piece, Mitt Romney, The Foreign Policy of Know-Nothingism, can be found. And as we were talking about, maybe the emptiness of this guy's suit is the best thing we have going for us when it comes to his foreign policy. He can flip-flop around whatever he wants. Maybe that means he doesn't have to be so married to, you know, what the Kagan clan decides. assuming that he really even has a shot at beating the sitting president, which is quite doubtful to me. But anyway, so we were talking about all the neocons in the administration, or who would be in his administration, the guys who are advising him now, that kind of thing. But you really do a great job in this article, Doug, of going around the world, kind of, because that's where the American Empire is, pretty much everywhere, and sort of ticking off what Romney has said. You know, mostly what we see on TV of him on foreign policy is just, America's great, America's strong, and it always will be, and isn't that great, and don't you believe that, and vote Romney, kind of thing. Which maybe I'd be willing to settle for that BS if it didn't have much details to it, but apparently it does have detail, and he does get into the details at times. So, like, for example, could you explain to us what's Mitt Romney's policy on Afghanistan? How might it differ from the current policy, if at all?
Well, you know, it's one of those weird things where it's hard to know. I mean, that's one of those issues where, you know, Mr. Flip-Flop has been the flip-flop. You know, but the problem is he's talked about, you know, we have to win. I mean, he's also talked about timetables, and, you know, he's criticized the president for pulling troops out, but, you know, he's also indicated he doesn't want to stay forever. But he's used this language of winning, and, you know, I always find that scary, because I have no idea what it means to win in Afghanistan. You know, and does that mean that we stay there for 50 years, because that's what's necessary to win, whatever, you know, win means. And that's one of those areas where, you know, again, you know, if you're out there kind of portraying yourself as being tough, you know, you can imagine saying, we've got to stick around until we win. And then, you know, kind of coming up with some, you know, statistics or something which have to just, you have, we have to achieve before you're willing to pull troops out.
Yeah. Which, as you say, you know, you can't imagine it. You're a foreign policy expert. There really is no, I mean, hey, even Obama, when he announced the big surge, he still wasn't even pretending, Petraeus wasn't even pretending that, yeah, what we're going to do with this coin is we're going to defeat the Taliban. All they said was, well, we're going to weaken them to such a point that when we sit down to negotiate with them starting in 2011, then they'll do what we say. You know.
That's right, and it's this, you know, idea that, well, by at least 2014, you know, our guys will be strong enough that if we give them billions of dollars a year for the next 20 years, you know, they might be able to hold the Taliban back. Well, you're all great. I mean, that, you know, that's wonderful. I mean, you know, so that's what we've been doing for the last 10 years, trying to achieve that.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, John Glazer had a piece at antiwar.com saying that, you know, Obama's really lying here, spinning and spinning and spinning, declaring victory in Afghanistan. And I'm thinking maybe we need to just let him have it, you know? Yeah, you're right. We won. Hooray. We'll do a parade just like Rachel Maddow wants. You know, our guys deserve a parade.
Exactly. Exactly. Now bring everybody home and we're done. Thank you very much. Glad it worked so well.
You know, I guess if that's how it has to be, then, you know, I'm with that. We could do ticker tape. How much does that cost?
Exactly.
Compared to, you know, beefing up AFRICOM.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
You know, we need to bring them home, give them a parade, and then let them go back out into civilian life and not have to fight any more wars.
All right, now, how much more horrible is Romney on Israel and Palestine issues than Barack Obama?
Well, I think he's, you know, far, far worse. I mean, Barack Obama, I think, has been essentially rolled, you know, on the issue. My sense is that he actually has had some genuine sympathy for Palestinians. You know, he got rolled on the issue early with the election coming up. I think he just decided, I'm not going to have any problems here. I'm just going to do whatever I'm told. And that's where we're at. You know, Romney is a longtime friend of Benjamin Netanyahu. It goes back to like 20, 30 years where they were both, I think, at, you know, like a management company or something. And what, you know, Romney has said, among other things, is, well, you know, before I act, I'll call up, you know, my buddy, you know, Netanyahu and ask him if it's good. You know, and I just, it's shocking, frankly, because, you know, my reaction is, could you imagine if President Obama said, well, you know, before I do anything on Europe, I plan on calling up President Holland of France and asking him if he thinks it's okay. The neocons would go absolutely ballistic. But if you say, well, I'm not going to make any policy decisions until I talk to the Israeli prime minister, they all think that's wonderful. But that's essentially what Romney has said, and I find it striking.
Yeah. So at least Obama acknowledges that the Palestinians exist, not like he's going to do anything about it. Whereas to Romney, basically they're just invisible people. You could just force march them right out. He wouldn't even blink.
I think that's right. And I think that, you know, Barack Obama, you know, you set him down, he would admit that, yes, what's going on in the, you know, with the settlements and in the occupied territories is terrible. Yes, I wish I could do something about it, but I can't. So I'm just not going to say anything. Well, Romney would look at you and say, huh? I mean, what are you talking about? What's the problem? You know, everything's wonderful. You know, my friend, the prime minister, told me everything's wonderful, so why are you complaining?
All right, now, what about mucking around in Korea?
Well, it's one of those where he hasn't said a heck of a lot about North Korea, thankfully, because he'd probably be advocating another war. But you know, on that issue, to some degree, he couldn't be a lot worse than the Obama administration. I mean, they've strengthened the relationship with South Korea. You know, they've made no effort to try to let the South Koreans actually handle the problems over there. I mean, everybody kind of looks to China to you know, solve the problem, and frankly, China has no interest in doing so. They like the situation as it is now. Why on earth, you know, should they use their political capital to make things easier for America? And, of course, even if Romney thinks that's possible, he'll make it worse because he wants to have a confrontational policy with China. Well, you can't insult them on the one hand and then beg them for help on the other, yet that seems to be his policy.
Does he really want to have a trade war with China? He's just talking tough like Bill Clinton in the election here.
Well, I think, again, our hope is, you know, given the fact that he doesn't believe anything, that this is political, that he recognizes there's political kind of, you know, points to be made. Clinton did it. You know, others have done it. So he's getting out there. And, you know, Democrats have, you know, ended up recently being less pro-free trade than Republicans. So he probably figures this is a great way to defuse that issue. He's going to be really tough. People don't like the Chinese communists. People don't like, you know, trade. Okay, great. You know, here I can kill two birds with one stone. So my hope is simply he doesn't believe anything, so it won't matter.
What a shame that that's good politics.
I know. Yeah, that we have to be cynical and just hope that these people don't believe what they're saying.
Yeah. Well, and that the American people like to hear a bunch of warmongering against the Chinese or any kind of confrontation escalation, you know?
That's a minute.
The Chinese, there's a billion of them, and they got nukes. We have to be friends. Simple as that. So why find things to fight about when we can find things to be friends about?
Exactly. You know, it makes no sense to be enemies with them. You know, this century is going to be a lot better if we're friends than if we're enemies.
Yeah. All right. Now, has he said anything? I kind of mentioned offhand there, AFRICOM. We got all kinds of Africa stuff in the news and on the show today. But it seems, well, what the hey, there's this article here, Doug, called at news.antiwar.com by John Glazer. U.S. to send large combat brigade throughout Africa. AFRICOM will participate in military missions, training of indigenous forces, and war exercises. Is this just old South slavery in reverse now? We're just going to export all our plantation owners over there?
I think that what this is, we just want to run the world. And there's no reason if we want to run the world not to run Africa. You know, traditionally, we haven't done a lot militarily there. But with the end of the Cold War, why not? I mean, there's no longer anybody on the other side, so let's just get our troops involved all over. And isn't that wonderful? I think that tends to be the way Washington works.
Yeah. Well, and then I guess, I'm sorry, I forgot the title, the exact title of the thing, but they're pretty open, right, that this is really not so much about there's any interest in Africa that we really care about other than we want to keep China from having access to assets in Africa.
Yeah, I mean, you know, our involvement in Africa during the Cold War very much was anti-Soviet. You know, we're worried about the other side gaining benefits. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not so much that we have to do a lot. We just have to make sure that the folks on the other side don't do very well. I think that really is the focus.
America's such a poor sport, man. What is up with that? You know, this is interview coming up. Ramzi Baroud's written all about this oil war in South Sudan. That's America's war there, where, you know, we're on the side of the Southern Confederacy seceding from the Union.
No, I mean, it is very strange that, you know, we just don't feel we can ever stay out of anything. I mean, the great thing about free market economics is it tells you it doesn't really matter who owns the stuff. It's a world market. You know, we spent the Cold War trying to kind of gain influence in Africa. And we, you know, we ended up losing a lot of money, and it didn't come to much good. And my reaction is, you know, let the Chinese try. I mean, they've already had trouble in Zambia because it was their mine, you know, managers who shot a bunch of workers. So needless to say, the Zambians don't like them very much. The Burmese have turned to the West because they're nervous about the Chinese. Let the Chinese try it. We shouldn't have to worry about this. Let's go do our own thing.
Right. So the indispensable, my favorite lesson from that book, Overblown by John Mueller, was when we finally got tired and quit containing the Soviet Union, that it finally overexpanded and fell apart.
Yep, that's it.
That's all it took. Just like they're doing to us right now. Putin's like, oh, you need help invading Central Asia? Come on in.
Exactly. Please stay. Please stay.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Doug. Appreciate it.
Sure thing. Happy to be on. Take care.
Doug Bando, everybody. Cato.com.org.